Good afternoon. Did everyone have enough to eat? I'll try not to put you to sleep. I do appreciate the opportunity to be here, and I also appreciate when I called Mark and asked him to make some changes if he could. Wasn't long until he called back and said that they were made, or I called, I don't know who called who, but anyway, they were made, so I appreciate that. Anybody here that don't live in a community? We have different kinds of communities, of course, and I'm supposed to talk a little bit about leadership in the community. I'm not real sure why, when Jeremy asked me about it, why he picked me, but I suppose I have a few ideas. Some of these things will be personal with me. Some of these things will be things that I've observed from other people. And, of course, we're looking at it from our leadership in the community from the standpoint of being a member of the Lord's body and the influence that we can have in the Lord's body. They say you're not supposed to start with a disclaimer, but I want to remember what Jesus said in Matthew 15 and also in Luke 6 about the Pharisees, about the blind leading the blind, and if they're not careful, both will fall into the ditch. I don't suppose I'm totally blind, but there's a lot of leadership things that I don't know much about. And I don't know how this is going to come out time-wise, but when we get close to the end, if we have some time, we might throw out a little opportunity for some ideas from the crowd. I suppose leadership's already been defined. Simply, it's just guidance, direction, an example, a precedence. But I like this one. One who goes before. What's a community then, huh? Well, it's a group of people that share a common interest. They have common ties. They're subject to the same laws, usually. And usually live in a similar geographical area. I know that some of you, or maybe, I don't know how many of you, but you're urban or suburban, and I would say I'm from small town and rural. Now, we're still all people, and we still all have opportunities in whatever community we live in. Some of the things that I've mentioned, you may be able to relate to in your community that would be of similar nature. We've got some examples of leadership, and this is definitely in a broad sense. We're thinking of big things here, and some names came to mind as I was pondering on this. George Washington, what kind of a leader was he? What kind of an influence did he still have upon our thinking and upon, you know, the things that go on in this nation? Perhaps we've forgotten a lot of his ideals and things that he may have taught us. Christopher Columbus. You know, we think of leaders like this who made a big difference. What about Lewis and Clark? You know, they blazed their trail across the United States and made it possible for lots of things to happen. There's probably several of you that from California. You came from the west, most likely, or from the east and went west, most likely to get to California. Lewis and Clark might have had something to do with that. But these leaders, you know, they made a difference. And then we have, of course, in a negative sense, I was thinking about great leaders. Hitler was a great leader. He wasn't a good leader, as far as I'm concerned, but it depends on how you look at it. He was able to rally people. He was able to get things done and made a big impact in the world. As far as I'm concerned, it's a negative impact. And I'm sure glad that the Allies were able to subdue him and his regime. I like this one, though. I like Winston Churchill, even though he may have been a scalawag in some ways. And we read a little bit about some of his personal habits and the like. But he rallied the English people. When it looked like there was no hope whatsoever. So he made a big difference. And then I think of Roosevelt, of course, and Dwight Eisenhower. You can just go on with that list as long as you want to there. These are examples of great leaders in the broad sense. Well, let's think about some examples of leadership in a smaller sense. And trying to put these things together, I thought of things that occurred or have happened in mostly in my community or where I am from. I was born down there at a certain place, and it's called the M and V Junction because it's State Highway M and State Highway V, and there was a real dangerous intersection. You come over a hill there, and when people would pull out on V to go on M, there never was a fatality. There have been some wrecks there, but it was a dangerous intersection. We had a neighbor. He wasn't a member of the church. He was a member of a denomination, but he wasn't a member of the Lord's body. And he took it upon himself to get something done about that intersection. So after my mother died and things kind of came around, my sister heired the place and she sold it. And I was watching it really close, and then Don and I was able to buy it. As soon as we got it purchased, this man and his family, because by that time he was deceased, if I recall, but he had started this leadership in moving that junction to a safe place. And it's kind of interesting. Tom Woody was over there in a meeting when this was being done, and he observed it and talked about filling in the valleys and, you know, making the road level up through there. And he used that for one of his sermons there at Brookfield. But this Maxwell guy I'm talking about, his name was Gary Maxwell, and he spearheaded this thing and got it going, even though he didn't live to see it finished. And then way back, ahead of a lot of people here, but not everybody, I suppose 1946, 1947, or 1948, and we didn't have electricity. We had the old Delco. Y'all know what Delco is? Yeah, nobody knows what. Well, some of you know what Delco is, but we had more kerosene lamps than anything else. A man who was a member of a congregation of the Church of Christ he was real active in getting the rural electrification in our area. So here's a man that was associated with the Church of Christ that led or spearheaded or helped spearhead a project that's benefited the community immensely. Okay, and then when I was in high school, graduated in 1959, and about that year, there was a big movement made to get a new hospital in Brookfield. Pershing Memorial Hospital is the name of it. And named after, of course, General John J. Pershing. And I don't know who spearheaded that for sure, but there was quite a lot of activity getting this hospital. And I don't remember the man who was behind the movement to get it done. But here was something that was done. We have the hospital there now. Sometimes I wonder how good it is, but it's definitely benefited of a lot of men and women and boys and girls through the years. There's another man, and this was a lot later. This has probably been maybe 15 years ago. Really worked hard to get the YMCA, get a building and get a YMCA there in Brookfield. I've never been in the building. I always thought I could get all the activity and exercise I wanted outside it, and so far I have. I'm not opposed to it, but here's an example of leadership in the community. This man is not a member of the Lord's body. So let's think about leadership a little bit. There's two basic kinds, as I look at it. Of course, we have both men and women in our community who can be leaders, and are leaders very often. But what I'm thinking about is we've got what you call active leaders, leaders that are in the spotlight, in the limelight, and then we've got more quiet leaders. And I was thinking about that quite a bit. We usually think of people that do things and there's some fanfare with it. Sometimes that's not the best leadership. Sometimes there's a lot better leadership going on that we don't really see from the media. Let's look at something a little more active right now. And if you live in a city or a small city, most of them have a city council. You don't have to be a part of the council necessarily, but they usually have sessions where they get community generation of ideas or complaints, whatever it is. And you or I, as a member of the Lord's body, if we live in that city, can be a voice. And if need be, we could be a loud voice in the city council. Now, there's a group of people, they're religious, they're our neighbors, not too far from where we live. They have a lot of good ideas, and they're pretty close scriptural, and lots of things that they do. But I will say that they have a very high moral standard. There was a tanning shop, or whatever you want to call it, in Brookfield, and actually, in their advertising on the windows, they had, well, I'd just call it pornography. It was shameful. But me, I go up and down the street. I wasn't interested in that place, so I never looked at the windows. For some reason, this guy did. And he wrote me a letter, and he wanted the, I don't know if he wanted the church to do it or not, but he wanted at least members of the church to go with him to the city council. Now, one reason we didn't go is because we're rural and we're not actually not in the city. I throwed this out to my fellow brethren that we maybe ought to participate, or at least lend him some support. And you know, I couldn't get any of my brethren to agree. Maybe I should have gone on and gone to that meeting. The problem was, we really weren't a part of the city. I don't know how it turned out. I'm sure he went there. But I have noticed the advertising on the windows is not quite as bad as it used to be. Can we get involved in the political campaign? Yeah, there's some political things that we can take a stand for. And maybe we ought to get involved if we have if we want to put somebody in politics or somebody in office somewhere that can benefit our community and stands on the same ideals that a Christian would have, or maybe they are even Christian. Sometimes we say quote unquote Christian. Now, they may not belong to the Lord's body, but they may have some good Christian ideals and standards. And nothing wrong with supporting that as individuals. Not as a congregation. You know, we can promote an agenda if it's a good one. We want to be careful that we don't get involved in trying to promote those that aren't so good. You can be on a school board, can't you? If you can get somebody to elect you. Now, usually that school board job is one that nobody else wants, or it's somebody that does have an agenda, but my son, Daryl, many of you know him, he's on the school board in the district where they reside. Brother Wes Groves, some of you know, over at the Brookfield congregation. He's been a teacher, a retired teacher now, but he one time was on the school board too. And knowing Wes, he'd get people off center, you know. Sometimes he'd stir things up a little bit. But if it's for the right cause, why not? Let's lead out. Okay, there are areas on on leadership and the active role as a school teacher, preachers, coaches. There are several areas that we can lead out in by our profession in our community. I could tell you a lot of things about things that's happened to me in the teaching profession. And maybe as we go along here, if the time works out right, we can relate to some of the things that I have done that I feel are positive to promote the Christian ideals in the community. Well, let's talk about some of these quiet leaders. Now, I don't know if this is quiet or if this is active so much, but Brother Tom Oldham, some of you know him. He's my fellow elder there at Brookfield right now. He lives in Marceline, Missouri. And he's I don't know exactly what the titles are, but he's a part of the community development and the community industrial development, and he's also active in what happens in Marceline, I suppose, in the recreational and the beautification and all these things that go in the city of Marceline. He's also a member of, I don't know which cemetery it is, but one of the cemetery boards there. Of course, he's also in the monument business too. But anyway, he's in a position where he can make a difference in the way he leads in that community. Let's talk about these quiet ones now. There was a brother in Columbia, Missouri. I know Rick knows him, or knew him, Brother Bob Blair. Bob died, I don't know, a year ago or something like that. He didn't come to the Lord until pretty late in life. And he never was outgoing. He had his opinions, don't get me wrong, but he never was outgoing. You call on him, and I did one time when he was at Brookfield for dismissal. He did dismiss, but it was a tough deal. He just was so timid. But at his funeral, they gave a little time for reflection on memories, and a lady got up and told how Bob was always there. Her testimony was that when there was a community project, and I think this had something to do with a food bank program of some kind, Bob was there. He was always there, and of course, he had his own quiet humor about him, and she commented on that too. But he made a difference. This woman remembered that. It was told at his funeral, at his memorial. Another man that most of you knew was Elber Fritz. Elber Fritz happened to be my cousin, my mother's first cousin. And I remember Winfred Lee commenting on Elber one time about something that needed to be done there at the Ozark Church building. Now, I don't think Elber was ever an official deacon. I don't think he was. But was he?
Yes, he was.
He was. Okay, he was. Okay, thank you for that correction. So Winford said something went wrong with the plumbing or whatever. I don't know what it was. Someone was mentioned about it. Elber just got up and went and did it. Quiet leader. And Elber, he didn't do much public work either. It just wasn't his thing. But behind the scenes, he would lead out and just go do it. And I've had him do the same thing at home there around the farm there when they'd come to visit. So these are examples of quiet leaders. Did these things without fanfare. Didn't want fanfare. It would have embarrassed him. My wife has a cousin named Ted Cassidy, and he used to be a state trooper. But he's still a quiet man. He never speaks loudly that I ever heard. And he's real active in the old Threshers and Flywheel reunion up at Macon County. I don't know, you might know him, Marty, do you? It's a different county than you're in, of course, but he just kind of leads out and helps get these things done in the community. Now, I'm going to mention one here that I don't know where we should put him, but I'm thinking of Jesus Christ, God's Son. He was both kinds of leaders, but if you stop and look at his leadership, it was mostly in the form of humility. And the thing that impresses me with Christ was before he died, when he called the disciples together, tried to get them to realize that he himself was a servant, so he washed their feet. And you remember Peter's reaction and all that. But he led in humility. Now that may sound like a contradiction, but humble people lead. Jesus showed us how that's done. Well, let's talk about some things in the community, perhaps. Matthew 5:16 says what? Now let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify who? Your Father which is in heaven. We want to be careful whenever we're trying to do some leadership in our communities that whatever we do, that the spotlight isn't put on us, but it's put on Jesus himself. We mentioned the Pharisees, the blind leading the blind. We want to be careful that we aren't like the Pharisees. We make a big show out of it to be seen of men. Another thing that we want to be careful about in our community leadership is we want a good report from without. Now we're talking about church members. Now I believe in general, I have a good report from without in my community. But there are people in my community that know a lot of things about the mistakes I've made too. And the blunders. Now, having a good report from without is not just for elders and deacons and preachers. It's for church members. You need to be respected in your community. Now, I'm thinking of the passages in 1 Peter chapter 2, 19 and 20, perhaps, and 1 Peter 3, 16 to 18. We may be persecuted for things we're doing. If we're persecuted for things that we're doing that are not good, that are wrong, we need to take that patiently. But what about if we're persecuted for things that we do, the leadership, things that we do that are right? We need to take it patiently too and realize the reason we're doing it. And it's for the glory of God. We need to live lives of leadership in our community that resists darkness. Let your light so shine. What do a lot of us do? And I've done it. What does the ostrich do? Sticks its head in the sand. I've done that. Not really because I wanted to do it, but I just didn't do anything. I didn't lead out like I could have. I had a conversation with a neighbor just not too long ago, right after that corner of that M&V junction I was talking about. He stopped there and rolled down his window, and something was said about honesty. I don't remember what we was talking about, actually. And he said, "Oh, you said you can be 99% honest." I said, "No. Need to be 100% honest. Is that easy to do?" But do your neighbors, do my neighbors, does my community know that I intend to be 100% honest? Well, I'm afraid I'm going to have to say sometimes that hasn't worked out that way. It's awful easy to be deceitful, isn't it? We want to lead in our community so that people know what we are, what we stand for, that we're honest. I'll give you some examples of things that maybe I've been personally involved in the community, and that might have been in my immediate community, but it was in the community where I was teaching or very close. Have any of you ever been called upon, both men and women now, brothers and sisters, at community gatherings to pray? How many of you have? Well, I'm not going to ask you how many of you did, because I'm assuming that most of you did. Now, still, once in a while, some community organization will ask for prayer. I belong to the Retired Teachers Association, and I don't attend all their meetings by any means, but I think every meeting that I've been to, they had a prayer. And I applaud that. We had a neighbor that, he's done some foolish things. He's really a good neighbor. And they are German Baptist people. They have really high morals. They're really good people. He ran a dairy. I guess he still does, but he wasn't getting enough hot water. He needed 180 degree water to wash his dairy barn down with. The pop-off valve on the hot water heater wouldn't take that much pressure without popping off and losing his heat. So he put a plug in it. Well, he'd leave electricity on. He'd wash his dairy down. And then when he got all done, he'd turn the electricity off, except for one night. I'm going to say 2 or 3 in the morning, I don't know what. A hot water heater blew up, blowed the bulk tank partially through the side of the dairy barn and scattered insulation and debris all over everywhere around there. So I went over to help him and assist. And then not long after that, his house, I don't know how long, quite a while, but his house got a fire. And the children just barely got out alive. And so his people, the German Baptist people from Pennsylvania to California came in there and built him a house. And it's a big house. Their men came in from all these different states. A lot of them were from Kansas, if I remember. But their electrician wasn't available. And so he knew me and knew I'd helped him out before. So actually he hired me to do most of the wiring on this house. Some sheetrockers showed up. They drove all night from Pennsylvania. And this one old fellow was about my age. And I really appreciated him. They had driven all night. And I got there the next morning. And they were starting to sheetrock already. And I heard him talking about to his group of younger people about Nehemiah. And, I just liked them because I liked the atmosphere. With their main carpenter downstairs, he'd start singing hymns. He was just down there, and he was a good singer. And I appreciated those things. Well, when it came noon, of course, their women all brought the food in there and had all these German Baptist people around there, and I'm sure they were well qualified in their denomination. Who do you think they asked to pray? They asked me to pray. Well, I did, of course, and I appreciated the gesture, and apparently they appreciated me enough, respected me enough that I was able to do that. And here's another one, though. My granddaughter got married in a denominational setting, married a man that's not in the church. They had the reception at, I think it was what they call it, the Elks Lodge. Anyway, it's a big place where they can meet together. Well, usually at those kind of places, they have plenty of booze too, you know, before things are over, and they have a dance. But they also had a feed. We went, now I felt out of place, I always feel out of place in that particular setting, but we was there, and guess what? Come time to eat, the denominational preacher wasn't there. They called his name on the PA. Where's he at? Well, nobody responded. After a while, they started calling my name. Now, it had to be from my reputation before. They wouldn't have known that I would even consider such a thing. How do you lead out in prayer in a setting like that? I don't know if I did a good job or not. And I wasn't prepared. But I did it. And I still think you may be able to do similar things in your community if the opportunity arises. Another one that was probably even worse, when I was teaching school, being a class sponsor, I had to, you know, sponsor the junior-senior party, prom they call it. And as a Christian, member of the Lord's body, I do not participate in dancing. And the scriptures do condemn it. A lot of my brethren won't agree with me, but they still do condemn it. Promiscuous dancing is condemned in the scripture. Of course, they had that there, and they had the loud music. Well, one of the class members, or one of the students that I know well, she was a very good student, a good friend. She wanted to know if I'd come in and dance, and I said no. I think it's morally wrong. So she didn't argue that point. And I said, besides that, your toes would get stomped on. But anyway, I did tell the people that I will not participate in the party, but I'll stay at the door and keep the keyboard and try to keep the booze out, which probably I didn't do a very good job of. But after a while, they stopped the music. Well, they didn't stop it yet. They called for me to come in and say a prayer, and then they stopped the loud music. Now what do I do? I wasn't prepared for that one either. How do you pray in a situation like that? What do you pray for in a situation like that? Give it some thought. It might happen to you. I found out that one of the jobs at our class reunions, I'm talking about my class reunion, and we had our 50th in 09, they found out, of course, they knew what I stood for even in high school, but they found out that they needed, and they still have somebody pray. And I've had the prayer at several of these class meetings. And I also know that some of my classmates never did grow up, and they still try to bring in the booze. And, of course, they still have to have their dance most of the time. One time I was asked if I would plan, or help on a committee to help plan the meeting. Well, that time I was able, I think, influential enough to keep the dance out of it. But the rest of the time I haven't been on the committee. But they always ask me for a prayer. Okay, I'll tell you, I'll do the prayer. But I asked one of the class officers here last time, maybe. I said, well, maybe somebody else wants to pray at this. I said, you know, I don't want to, you know, have to do it all the time. He said, that's your job. It still has to have something to do with my reputation as to for what I stand for. I'm not trying to give myself any stars or anything like that, but your reputation is there, whoever you are. And in the Lord's body, we need to be careful about that. So that gets me to this point right here that I want to make in leadership in the community. Do people know what I stand for, or do they only know what I'm against? And the subject that we were talking about earlier today. People need to know that we're against these immoral practices. But they need to know first, maybe, what we really do believe and stand for. And if they know that, then that will give us something to work on as to maybe help them to understand what we actually do stand for. Another thing that's happened to me personally, just as being a community member, we had, they don't live there anymore, but we had Catholic neighbors, not more than 2 miles from us. They had a daughter that was going to get married. This man, I guess it was him, I don't know, whether maybe it was a daughter, I'm not sure who asked now. They came down, they knew that I did weddings. They came down and wanted to know if I'd have the wedding at their home. Yeah, I said I would. It gives us an opportunity. If you have an opportunity like that, you can do some teaching. You can talk about the marital vows and the loyalty that we need to have in marriage. Just because they were Roman Catholic doesn't mean that they didn't have many of the same values that I had. And I was able, I felt, to teach. Well, before the thing was over, when they got ready to have their little reception, I felt kind of bad about this because the man himself had been an alcoholic, and he had had a car wreck and almost killed him, and he completely left it alone, so far as I know. But what did they do? The first thing that the family did there was pop the cork on that whiskey bottle, and I left. But I felt sorry for that man, tempting him the way they did. But my leaving there probably made a statement to them, or I hope it did. There's another neighbor that had 2 daughters, and two different times, of course, quite a ways apart. But they asked me if I'd come and have their daughter's wedding. I think maybe the daughter might have asked me in that case. And I was able to do it. It was in, one of them was in a, I forget where the one was. One of them was actually in a nursing home where a family member was at the time of the wedding. But I was able to do some teaching there, I feel. But the thing that made me really feel kind of good is because they knew where I stood and they knew I would be able to do those kind of things in a positive way. Little White Oak Church of Christ, and a lot of you know where that's at. Now, Sister Oral Cook, that used to be there, somebody came by and wanted to know if they could use the building to get married in. Well, she called me, wanted to know if I would be interested in performing a wedding ceremony. I think I've done 3 over there. And hopefully each time I was able to give some positive influence on marriage vows and loyalty in marriage. Another thing that amazed me, we had a neighbor who passed away. He was a good man, a good neighbor, but he had no religious affiliation that anybody knew about. When he passed away, his widow wanted to know if I'd have his funeral. We had no connection socially except that he was a farmer in the community and we knew him. Of course I took his funeral. Brother in the church, Fred Hansen, some of you may know Fred Hansen, but Fred's father died and he had no religious affiliation. They didn't know what to do. Fred said, "I think I know somebody who'll help us out." So he came over one cold night, it was in the winter time, and wanted to know if I'd have his father's funeral. Well, it's kind of hard to speak at a funeral and give any condolence to the family about the salvation of their loved one that's deceased unless, you know, they had some hope. Neither one of these men had any hope, so far as I could understand. So he put me on the spot again. But I'm glad that people thought of me to do that. Not because it's me, but because I hope it was a Christian influence that I had exhibited in the community. So you may have a lot of opportunities that you're not aware of. I was able to do through a sister in Christ some a ministry in the prison at Cameron, Missouri. And the man that we, it happened to be this sister's brother, fleshly brother, but we were able to teach him. He did obey the gospel. He didn't stay loyal. He couldn't stay out of prison, is what it really amounted to in the end. But there was an opportunity. And I could tell you some stories about that too. You know, the feeling it is to go in, and some of you have done some prison work. It's kind of different inside there when the doors are locked. I think Brother Charles Ross and Dan Huff and maybe others have had some experience that I know about. Well, let's look at quickly here some community projects that you could get involved in. I mentioned earlier that Brother Tom Oldham was on this committee or some of these committees for development in his city. My son Darrell and Wes Groves being school board members. We can belong to civic organizations as long as they're not lodges and things like that that try to take the place of Christ in the church. And you can name your own. I don't know the names of very many of them. I'm not a member of any of them, so far as I know. Township clerk. I think this is one thing Jeremy he knew I was a township clerk. Well, I got on the township board as a clerk back in about 87, and I can't get off. Nobody wants it. Now, we do have responsibility. We handle. Now, I didn't get on because I wanted on. Actually, the guy that was on there had a nervous breakdown, and he asked me if I'd take over, and I haven't been able to get loose. But we handle taxpayer money. I sign checks. And even though the clerk's not supposed to say much in the board meetings, they still want to know my opinion. And also at our meetings, I think I've been able to keep the beer out of the meetings. They know where I stand on that. You know, yeah, for refreshment, they sometimes want to bring something. But I think I've been able to influence them a little bit in the right direction, hopefully. I was asked if I would be on the rural fire board. And I accepted. Now they voted me as vice president, and I hope nothing happens to the president because I really don't want to do it. But there's a place to lead. We do make a difference in the community. We have a good rural fire department, and we do good things when it's needed. And I feel honored to have a part of that. So you, as a Christian, may be asked to serve on some of these boards. I know a sister in Christ that served on the hospital auxiliary, Sister Rosalie Potter. Some of you know her. She served for quite a while on the auxiliary, doing good things for free. I mean, she didn't get any pay out of it. I was asked as a retired teacher to tutor students who are having trouble. I was supposed to do that last January, but I never did get a hold of anybody, so I haven't led out like I should have in this. But here's a time and a place where maybe I could do some good as far as influence in the community. Another thing that we could do, and I have done in the past, was write editorials. Well, I never wrote the editorials. I wrote some little articles. Brother Bill Hensley used to write it for the Brookfield paper. Whenever he stopped, I wrote them for quite a while. I don't remember just why we stopped now, but we did. We used to have a little clip on the radio, and I had that for a long time. One of my neighbors one time was talking to another neighbor, and they heard that, and they said, "That's D.D. Russell." So you can do things. Why don't we? Why don't we write some editorials? Because I see other religious people and concerned community members writing editorials for the local paper. I thought about it, but I just haven't done it. I mentioned the neighbor that worked to get the YMCA. We can help raise money for other things, too, like for cancer research, or we can go to the candlelight walks or whatever they are. You don't have to be a cancer victim to do those things. How many of you would be active, if you can be, in being a blood donor? Or helping sponsor blood drives. What about being a 4-H leader? the kids up where my granddaughter goes, actually she asked me to come, but it's called the Aggie Boosters. And they wanted my money, which is all right. But they knew I was interested because I had the granddaughter, but I'm interested in those things anyway. But just last Friday, the school has some territory around the buildings there it's a hay field, and the FFA gets to put up the hay every year and sell the hay. Well, I've been involved in that, and we was last Friday. We was able to get it done, and it's a place in the community that you can serve, maybe. One thing that we want to do as we kind of wind things down here is be hospitable. If a neighbor comes to your door for any reason, or even if it isn't a neighbor, if you're not afraid of them for some reason, you're suspicious of them, then invite them in. Cup of coffee. Or maybe iced tea if it's a day like we've been having here lately. Let them come in. Be sociable. When else would we have a better opportunity? Maybe in our home, when they come in there, will they see our Bibles where we've been using them? Will they see some little plaques on the wall that may have a scripture or something spiritual on it? Will they notice the demeanor of the people in the house, the way we talk and the way we act? Sure. So be hospitable. Lead in neighbor projects. That's what I'm going to call this. There's been a number of times that I have helped an injured farmer, or if there's been a death or cancer victim, there's been a number of times that I've been helpful, and occasionally been kind of the leader in getting it off the ground. We've gone in and put up a man's complete hay project in 2 days. Now, I said we, I'm talking about neighbors, and many of them are denominational neighbors, but we as a neighborhood on something good were able to get together and get something done that made a positive influence in the neighborhood. Now, here's something I want to point out, and the time's kind of running along here pretty fast, but back in 1954, my father was killed on a tractor. And that was in August. And in December, my sister was killed in an automobile. And my mother I was the oldest, I was 13, and then she had my brother Donald, and he was 4 years younger, and then Jack was the youngest one. She had a hard time because now times were kind of tough. My dad had some debt, but that we was able to kind of get that under control. But Mother made a statement one time that I've never forgotten. And she said something like this: the neighbors, some of them are religious and some not, but the neighbors spent more time, put in more effort to help my mother through that than the church members. Not that the church members didn't do something, don't get me wrong, but the neighbors were closer geographically many times, and they came and they helped her out. Now, let's not let it be said that we don't help people as church members, and it don't have to be our own. Let's get out there and lead in helping and letting our light shine. Mark's over here. He's a mailman, as you know, and we've probably got other people that work for the mail of U.S. Postal Department. But we had a man over there. He was a Baptist preacher. He was a friendly man. Everybody liked him. Everybody liked him. He had gobs of funerals and weddings. But he was called the whistling mailman. He was happy. He would go down the street carrying the mail and he would be whistling. People liked him. And he was encouraging. He was friendly. He was happy. He had a good attitude. Can't we do that? I don't know if Mark's a whistler or not, but... But I think he does have an influence on his patrons. There's another man over there. He happens to be a Baptist too, but I'm not picking on Baptists, but that's what he happens to be. He's retired, and he spends lots of time with Bible studies and nursing homes, and people like him. He has an influence on people, a good influence. My brother Lloyd Potter and myself, and others as well, have visited in nursing homes and then tried to work with the activities director, which we did, and try to make life easier for those folks who live in there. We held a Bible study at Bristol Manor after my mother was in there for a little while, and we continued that after she died for about 13, 14 years. And it finally kind of dried up to where it wasn't working very good, so we didn't do that anymore. There are some brethren that are active with the little people, sports, and t-ball, and things like that. You know, a lot of things you can do. But as we draw this to close, and we could talk about a whole lot of Bible characters. Now, I don't want you to neglect them, because there are some real examples of Bible characters like Joseph. But the two that I want to mention as we go along here, in Nehemiah 4 and 6, the people had a mind to work when they built those walls. Who inspired them? Well, God, basically, but Nehemiah was their leader. And in the 6th chapter, the 3rd verse, whenever the people out there were trying to discourage them, Sanballat and whatever the other's names were, they said, stop. It's not going to work. Nehemiah said, we're doing a great work and I can't come down to talk with you at a conference. Okay. In the workplace, be honest. Don't steal from the factory. Put in your time. You're going to collect an hour's work. You do an hour's work. My wife had that reputation that came from someone outside that had worked with her. She worked in a factory there in Brookfield. But to close this thing off, one thing that we need to learn to do is to lead in being forgiving. Matthew 6, 14, 15, read that if you want to, but we need to lead our community with a forgiving spirit. And we could talk quite a little bit longer on some of these Bible characters, but I'm going to draw it to a close because I think I've already exhausted my time just a little bit. I thank you for the opportunity.